Nah, we tried.
Okay. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, we're recording.
Hi. Thanks for coming. This is the 11 a.m. presentation, Making Instruments, Making Music, at the first Maker Faire, second day. I really appreciate your coming. We have three individuals who make their own instruments and then proceed to make music with them. We're going to do a bit of a mix of a presentation and a performance. They'll be playing some of what they have here, talking about how it's made. I'll ask them a bunch of questions. About midway through, we have 45 minutes. We're going to do a little bit of performance. It will be audible over the pinball machines. And then we'll maybe take some questions from you, because I think that even just sitting here, having heard nothing, you may already have questions in your head. I'll introduce them all briefly and then talk just a bit about what it is we're up to and then proceed. So just quickly, this is Chris Bobrowski at the end.
Hello.
This is Donald Bell, who records as Chachi Jones. And this is Tom Cope, who records under and performs under many names, primarily Univac.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Cool. So the subject for today's discussion is the idea of making your own instrument and then making music with it. The idea of making an instrument is nothing new. Wagner somewhat famously invented a specialized tuba to sort of fill out his orchestration. Les Paul, the guitarist, brought us the solid body electric guitar and multi-track recording. A fellow named Robert Fripp brought looping into the fold for studio, for making the studio his instrument, something that we could perform live. In the realm of contemporary classical music,
a
fellow named Harry Partch, whose name may be familiar, he invented these monstrous bells and these really ingenious instruments. And unlike a lot of composers who preceded him, he left behind a physical legacy. And that's a really interesting idea, that the composer increasingly is leaving behind physical objects and not just the written music that they've made and the recordings they've made. So now I just want to briefly introduce each of our participants, and then we'll proceed with the questions. Starting to my left, this is Tom Koch, who records his Univac. When he isn't turning electronic toys that you see here into Inside Out, he's a frequent collaborator with the Big City Orchestra. He's also the sound guy for the band Negative Land. He's a Macintosh tech, and he has two boys under four. He records under another number of names, Professor Warner V. Slack, As God's Grandparents, Bumper Meat, Tech Dweeb, and under his own name, Tom Koch. Next up, we have Donald, who records as Chachi Jones, Donald Bell. He's from Oakland, California. He lives in Oakland, California. As an electronic musician and editor for San Francisco's Robot Speak magazine, he spends a lot of time pointing and clicking away at his computer. His music is filled with emotion and begs to be enjoyed, scrutinized, and bumped from car speakers like some kind of Martian hip-hop. And then the far left, we have Chris Bobrowski. Chris is a sound artist and composer living in Oakland, California. In addition to French horn, she plays acoustic and electronic instruments of her own design. You see here, too, the Gliss glass on the left, and then these are kelp horns that she has right here. She's currently teaching and directing the electronic music program at the College of San Mateo, and she's a participant in the quartet Vorticella. So maybe each of you could just briefly introduce yourself and then maybe play a little sound just to have people have a sense of which of the sounds are associated with you. Tom?
Hi, thanks for coming. I do circuit bending, and I primarily focus on kids' toys. So I'll play you a little example. This one was made out of a kid's Teletubby. So you can see the display also does weird things when we trigger it. And as with most circuit bent things, sometimes they're a bit cantankerous. They don't like to work exactly all the time. I can't tell how loud that is. Sorry if it's too loud.
I'm Chachi Jones. I primarily make electronic music that isn't so experimental, but I like taking sounds from different devices that make weird things you wouldn't be able to get out of a synthesizer. So I really like circuit bend instruments too, like Tom, because they create this raw, weird, alien sound that wasn't intended to be made by the original device or by any musician. So there's a lot of interesting raw material you can get out of hacking kids' toys to get, you know, weird bits of sound. So I'll play a little bit of my Texas Instruments Touch and Tell, which has been touched, you know, a lot, and hacked around. I've got a little pitch knob on here and little switches that send it into a robotic Tourette's syndrome. Just spits out weird bits of, you know, alien robot speak. So here we go.
Press a picture.
That's a touch and tell. It's been horribly mutated.
Hi, I'm Chris Bobrowski, and I made this instrument over here called the Gliss Glass. I also brought some of my bull kelp horns. A lot of my instrument building has some physical component where I'm taking either natural or everyday objects and modifying them into experimental musical instruments. The Gliss Glass, you actually play it the way you would a wine glass at a party that you're bored at. So I'll play that for you a little bit.
Thanks, Chris. The sounds that you're hearing are in some ways very familiar and very unfamiliar. I mean, you have here a toy that you might have played with as a child or that your child may have played with, and you have, as you suggested, things that you might have done at a dinner party but then have been since been expanded into performance art. I want to walk through each of these and ask some questions about how they come up with it. Just for a little background, my name, by the way, is Mark Wiedenbaum. I've been writing about electronic music for about 15, 20 years. And I guess the primary place you might see me on the web is a place called disquiet.com. It's a website about music and technology I've been doing for about 10 years. Just to start with, Tom, you used the word circuit bending. You sort of introduced it to this conversation. Could you describe briefly what that is?
Yes. Circuit bending, I guess, typically is sort of taking an existing electronic device and crossing wires and taking voltage away and putting voltage into parts of the board where it wasn't intended, and thereby it makes really, really interesting things come out that the manufacturers never really intended to have. So the sounds that are coming out, they probably would have been considered a defect. Striving to get unique sounds that no one's ever heard before out of these circuit bend devices.
Thank you. Chacha, you work with circuit bend instruments as well. But as you've mentioned, the music you're making isn't necessarily what one might term experimental. I think many people would, but I think in the broader realm, I understand what you're getting at. Can you talk a bit about that divide, that the sounds themselves are kind of insanely chaotic, and yet what you're trying to make out of it is much more familiar?
Yeah, a lot of my own music is conventionally electronic, somewhat dance music, music that's based off of sampling, and even like hip-hop culture where you'll sample records, you'll sample a bass guitar, and you'll kind of chop them up and weave them together. The appeal of circuit bend instruments to me, or making instruments that no one else had, was that I'd be able to get raw material that, you know, it'd be like getting a really good record to sample that no one else in the world had ever seen before. So it's like getting raw material that I could sample and weave into my compositions that was no one else could just pick up at a guitar center or a record shop was was really appealing to me. So, and if, you know, all the investment was going down to St. Vincent de Paul and picking up a handful of, you know, $2, you know, dejected kids' toys and popping them open and poking around, it seemed a pretty good investment of my time instead of, you know, saving up for some $3,000 super guitar pedal or something like that that, you know, I just wasn't in reach. So it's a lot of fun. And the results of it for my own music is I don't really record straight, undiluted performances of my circuit bend stuff, but I'll instead record it into my computer, slice up the best parts that I like, and maybe just use little loops or little tiny sounds as like a kick drum or a snare drum. And, but they're still kind of alien and unique, and that's what I like about it.
Thanks. Chris, I think to people in the audience, it may appear that you're sort of the odd person out, that you're not all wired and gizmoed out. But you'd mentioned earlier that there was an electronic element from the start that you were trying to use to amplify organic sounds or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that when you get involved with instrument making, there's definitely a connection to electronic music in the sense that with electronic music, you have all these timbral possibilities, these sound qualities that you're manipulating. And when you're making instruments, I think that part of it is you're looking for those unusual sounds that maybe you can't get directly with a traditional instrument.
Tom, when you're making an instrument, either out of an existing instrument or something that happens to emit sound, I imagine that chance plays a large role in the sound that's emitted. Can you talk about how you sort of became comfortable with randomness?
Hey. Yeah, definitely. Chance plays a big role. I don't have a really big electronics background, and in general, circuit benders tend not to, and that's kind of the way you want to have. You want to actually have that element of chance. You open up a toy and you put your fingers all over the board and you see where the funny sounds start coming out, and then you start adding switches and pots and variable resistors to then change the voltage. So it's definitely all about kind of randomness, but then you can sort of then plan based on the randomness, you know, as far as like how it fulfills with the casing, and the ultimate product comes out of what you find out starting with the randomness.
Thanks. Chachi, you not only make the instruments and make music with them, but you sell them as well. Can you talk a bit about what it's like to sort of put that much effort into something and then offer it up to the marketplace?
I think the amazing thing is that people would even want to buy them. Just because they're, it's much more, even from 2 years ago, it's a much more standard thing to come across an article or an artist that talks about, you know, homemade instruments or circuit bench instruments. But yeah, I sold them through the Robot Speak store in San Francisco for a few years. And I was really amazed that people walk into a store that has, you know, all kinds of conventional synthesizers and drum machines and commercial software that people would use that have, you know, $1 million advertising campaigns. And the first thing they'll go for in the glass case is that Speak and Spell that has a bunch of knobs poking out of it. And they'll go past all the Moog synthesizers and amazing, you know, $1,000 technology and just have that weird emotional or wacky connection to some hot-rodded kid's toy. And it's odd, but it's also really fun to watch, and I'm happy that I was able to sell a bunch of interesting stuff. And it's not, it wasn't heartbreaking to part with them.
Okay. It just looks like so much effort goes into them.
A lot of effort goes into it, but it's just like any kind of craft, like someone who knits a scarf or you know, silkscreens a t-shirt. It's fun to apply something that's uniquely your own kind of skill and talent and have it be appreciated by someone else who wants your weird little kid's toy that you put a bunch of knobs on. So, yeah.
Chris, you play regularly, not often enough, but regularly with a group called Vorticella.
Yes, yeah.
Could you tell people about the makeup of that group, who plays the instruments, and then how your instruments have become part of this ensemble?
Sure. The group Vorticella is a quartet, and there's a cellist who pretty much plays just cello. Occasionally she'll add little metal objects and use two bows and such. There's also Karen Stackpole, who plays percussion, and Brenda Hutchinson, who's also an instrument builder. She plays the long tube, which is a 9-foot metal tube where she sings into it and works with the modulations, the natural modulations of the metal tube to modify her voice. And then myself, I play a horn, French horn, in that mix, along with all these kelp horns. Should I play a little bit of them? So I'll play a little bit of the kelp horn. So for a couple of these horns, I'm using a French horn mouthpiece. And, you know, a lot of horn players, I think, you arrive in California, you go to the beach, and there's this beautiful bull kelp just waiting to be played. So hence the kelp horns.
It's there. Two of the people here, Chris and Chachi, live in the East Bay. Tom's lived up here, but he lives in LA currently. There's a lot of venues in San Francisco that host this sort of music on a regular occasion. The tough thing is that often the audience is a small portion of what we see here. Just Thursday night, I went to a concert at a place called the Luggage Store Gallery, which is on Market Street. They host experimental music every Thursday night. When the concert began, there were 3 people in the audience. I was one of them. When the second set began, I realized that 2/3 of the audience was the second set. It's really nice to see people here, and it's interesting that the audience is here drawn not so much just for the musical element, but because of how the instruments themselves are made. I see you often there at the Luggage Store. So what I'm wondering is, speaking directly to an audience that's here more for the physical element than maybe for the musical one, could you take one object and talk a bit about how you constructed it? Just choose one.
Well, I'll talk about the Opera Daisy series. This was initially a flower pot, like a cheesy flower pot that sang Daisy, Daisy, out in the morning dew. And so I took it and I painted it up and I added optical resistors to the leaves. And optical resistors change resistance with light falling upon them, and added the nose and mouth from a CPR dummy. But the unique part about this is when you play it, you also can touch the bottoms of the optical resistors and add your own body's capacitance and resistance to the circuit. So you have a total of 6 total control points. And this is a pretty difficult instrument to master. I've sold several of these, and the people that buy them really, really like them, but it takes about a month to sort of figure it out. But once they do, it makes just the most amazing variety of noise. And I'll give you a demonstration. One thing that's also nice is with the optical resistors, you can use blinky blinky LEDs as sequencers. Thank you.
Thanks. It's masterful. Chashi, similarly, take just one of your objects and just... I think from where you're sitting, they may just look like it's still a speak and spell, but when you get up close, you realize there's a lot of switches on there that weren't there when you had it when you were a kid. So if you could just take one and just talk about what the different devices you've done to it do.
All right. Let's see. Can I use the mini jack out of, like, this lady's mini jack? Yeah. All right. This is a circuit bent. What is this? A speak and read. You might remember the speak and spell, the orange one, or the speak and math, the gray one. This is the hippest amongst all three. It's the speak and read. The modifications I made to it, pretty much all the knobs and switches on the side are not stock. The main one here is going to be like the pitch knob, which is the big McDonald's red orange knob. Let's see.
We're at level 2. Level 3.
So that changes pitch up and down. There's also the infamous glitch button, which will just trigger some random. Sometimes a word, sometimes a weird mash of phonemes and glitches.
Chris, the Gliss Glass in particular, I imagine this is not the first thing that you built, that it took some experimentation to come up with it. So how did this final form, and even is this the final form, or is it still under development?
This is definitely a usable form. I'd love to work on it again, but I don't know when that will be. I started out with this idea of just wanting to create really slow sliding pitches, hence the term gliss from glissando, musical term. And water seemed to be a natural element to work with for that. So I started experimenting with different ways to do that, and glass seemed to be the most malleable and easiest to work with, believe it or not. And what happened is that I started in Germany looking around for glass blowers and such, and I ended up working something out with a industrial glass worker who made glass pieces for science labs and for industry, and he helped me make these. And so I did have prototypes with big brandy wine glasses with little tiny tubes from like fish tanks where you could siphon the water from one to another. And from that, it just developed. I don't know if you can tell, but they're all interconnected. So you can't really play one without the others going. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. What we have here are three people who make very different instruments to pursue some sort of musical goal. And we're going to talk a bit about what that dividing line is between making something and then making something of it. It's a sort of step-by-step process. But in advance of that, one of my favorite things is simply to talk to musicians, because whenever I listen to music, it makes me ask questions in my head. And the opportunity as a music critic to be able to literally confront the musician with what they've done and ask them what's going on is helpful. But ultimately, these people are musicians and not public speakers, and so what I'd like to do is take a moment for them to do what they really do, which is to make music. So I thought maybe for 5 minutes or so, we could have a collaboration. It's worth noting, you could even say a world premiere of the three of you collaborating.
A super group.
It's a super group. It's the Asia of circuit bending and glissando.
Thank you.
Sort of becoming, it's just evident to me just how much we've heard so much of music the same way for so long, and it's so exciting that on an occasion like this you can hear music you've truly never heard before, even if you'd seen one of their individual performances. I have so many questions going through my head right now. I'm going to just take the easy way out, which is to ask you to ask questions. Does anyone have one?
First, I want to compliment you. I love both of these. That's awesome. But I gotta hear Lala. I gotta hear the Tubby.
We have a request for the Teletubby.
All right. Well, this is just the case, so I like to sort of case things up nicely. And this is, you know, the guts. So you can see here. This is the guts, and then I added all the switches. So I'll play. No, actually, it is kind of a decoration, but this is the guts of the Teletubby. This was a Microsoft Teletubby it was a pretty advanced kids' toy, and I completely stripped the electronics, which this was the screen, right? The Teletubby screen. So, you know, you have all the little Teletubby games, you know. And then you can glitch it out. And make it do totally different, weird things. A little loud. And it's really neat because there's a certain point where it glitches out and I can touch it and change the screen. So, like, the screen gets all weird and crazy. So, anyway.
Another question?
This is about the games that I used to play with that you've destroyed.
No, I just literally...
You sinner!
Okay. Made them better.
So, to redeem yourself, where's a good place for us to start attaching potentiometers, the turn dials? To just begin to play with, you know, on the toys. What parts of the circuits or whatever.
Put your fingers on it.
It's true. I mean,
put your fingers on it and find the pitch points, and then either remove the resistor or add a resistor to that area.
Your fingers on the pitch. Okay.
Put
Like,
you open up the board.
You open up the toy and have it running and put your fingers all over the board.
Got it. And when you hear a weird tone.
When you hear a weird tone, mark it.
Mark it, okay.
Add a pot.
Okay.
Add an obstacle resistor, add a human contact resistance point. Those are the three most common ones.
All right.
Now, a pot has two connectors, so it's an inline.
Right.
An obstacle resistor is inline, and a human contact resistance point is a single point.
Okay.
So.
Obstacle resistor, say it one more time.
Optical resistor are, you know, in line, so you like actually put it in line.
Okay.
Like a resistor has 2 points.
Yeah.
You can remove a resistor and put it in a pot, put it in an optical resistor, or you have human contact resistance points, which I don't know, do you have some on that?
There's one right on the top there. Tom talks about it with more of a precision of language than I even have for it. I basically, you know, like Tom, I got into it with no electronics background whatsoever. I think Tom, in going through the process, developed a lot more knowledge. I think that was his entry point into becoming pretty technically knowledgeable about what he's doing. I'm still pretty much an ignoramus about what I'm really doing. I still think of the switches I'm putting on here like light switches, you know, in my house.
That's pretty much what it is, though. Yeah. Just flow interruption.
So it's just there's light on, light off. So I'll open up any kid's toy, any instrument, and I'll get, you know, either just a long wire or those little tiny jeweler's screwdrivers that are just all metal little screwdrivers for fixing glasses. And I'll just poke around until it either shuts off because I've overloaded it, or it'll make some really interesting sound. And so I just slowly go through touching around. And it's powered off of batteries. People sometimes are like, I don't want to get electrocuted from toys. Anything powered off of some like little set of C batteries is not going to give you much more of a...
Yeah, even wall warts are actually okay because they're technically low voltage. They're converting the AC to DC. So, but, you know, it's a good practice to sort of make sure that you stick with stuff that's battery powered.
So there's no great... Like, I mean, you can actually go online and find all the little, you know, points to solder together. But the great thing is just opening it up, taking some little screwdrivers and going around and finding some little magical spot that's just the little tickle button, you know, inside the instrument and marking it, putting a switch on it, and then you can just have it at your access whenever you want to and make it do a little dance or whatever it does.
And the beauty of it is you really don't need to have an electronics background. I have friends that are electronics engineers, and they see this, and they're like, oh, my God. I wouldn't, you know, they're kind of freaked out about it because, you know, if this came up in a, you know, someone was trying to build this, they would throw it away as a, you know, a defect. So they're kind of like, the fact that I'm coming from it with no knowledge is actually to my benefit. So, and this was actually made out of a Speak and Math. So, like, he has the Speak and Reads. This one I completely recased. So the guts of the Speak and Math are inside. You can still see this. So,
another question?
So, do you buy the toys in multiple units because you're probably going to break one along the way? Or, like, how many
different originals? Depends on if you can find them or not. That's the hard part. But if I can find them and I make, and if I do bend one and it comes out really interesting, I certainly pick up others if you can.
This has been really eye-opening because I think with circuit bending sorts of things, I've always thought of it as just a source of weird sounds. Like you're saying, you sample it and you get a weird sound like this. But seeing them perform, there's a real kind of analog element to what you're doing,
and
especially
randomness.
When you put the potentiometer on the side. Yeah. I guess I was wondering, have you ever tried to retool something into a musical instrument that can be played tonally, right? The way you'd, or is that something that you've not been interested in, or you've never discovered a way to do that?
I'm not sure what you mean.
I mean, like, we've got all the neat sounds that are coming out, but...
Oh, actually trying to make
some of them are
musically controllable. Make it somewhat musically controllable?
Yeah, make it somewhat musically controllable so that as a performance, as something that's we're not just interested in the weird sounds, we're interested in performing it as a musical instrument.
I perform mine as musical instruments all the time.
Yeah.
And I sell them to people who perform them as musical instruments also. But I understand where you're coming from because people who are actual musicians, like I don't consider myself a musician, it's difficult for them to sort of approach these instruments in a perspective that's non-controllable. But then on the other hand, they really like that sort of random aspect of it. So, but I think that's kind of the goal for some things is try to make it in a scale or a tonal range or something that's bit more controllable, keyboard controllable. And some people have actually made breakout boxes for speak and whatevers and added keyboards, so then you can change the pitch based on a scale. So
there's also, just to add on to that, I was asked recently about if there's a way to make some of my instruments controllable by like a MIDI keyboard. Like if you pressed a note on a conventional keyboard, it would trigger, you know, some sound to come out of it. So it was kind of harness it. And there is a way. You can actually buy kits to retrofit these so you can play on a keyboard and it'll trigger the tones that come out of this. But I've gone down that path and it takes some of the fun out of them, to be honest. Once you make it more of like a just a tone generator for a keyboard or a wind instrument.
We only have about 5 more minutes, but could you talk a bit about Ableton Live? And I'm not sure if that's exactly where you're headed, but you use software as a means to funnel the sounds.
Sure, and what I was doing actually for the performance is I was taking a direct little feed out of the Touch Intel here and using a piece of software called Ableton Live, which is a off-the-shelf, pretty conventional piece of music software. And you can bring a clip in and set it so that it'll loop. I'll take a short little loop out of this, and I can build upon that and make a somewhat controlled composition that's based around time arrangements, six signatures, and pitching things up and down. And you can play things as a scale, although it'll be a scale off of what the original note source was, not necessarily a conventional tuned Western scale, but yeah.
Another question? Oh, good, because now I can ask one of mine. Which is a big thing that I've pondered when I've been listening to this music for a while is the whole chicken and egg scenario, which is that in every one of your cases, you've ended up making music out of the thing you've designed. And I just wonder, how much did you have a sound you wanted to get to and therefore design something that would get you there? And how much did you make something neat and then make music that was sort of a demo of that? If you could just maybe all answer that, I'd really appreciate it. Tom?
I think my thing, the sounds sort of come out of the gadgets themselves. So my approach is I find a thing, I go, wow, cool, I'm going to open it up and see what comes out of it. And then based on the sounds that come out of it, is that becomes the instrument or the device. So I don't necessarily have something in mind when I first start. The device sort of leads me to what sounds it wants to produce.
I started out, before I got into circuit bending, just as a musician. I played guitar and garage bands and then got into electronic music and, you know, synthesizers and all that. And eventually the quest for new sounds is what led me to circuit bending or creating my own instruments. I have some stuff here that isn't circuit bent, just contact mics on weird little boards and spoons and bits. But ultimately the quest is for unique new sounds that people haven't come up with. And if I circuit bent something and it made a horrible grating sound that I didn't want, then it wouldn't be a success for me. It would be, the quest is for tones and sounds that I want to incorporate into my music. But the music is the focus for me and not necessarily the gadgetry.
Though, of course, your definition of grating may be different from someone else's.
Exactly.
And Chris?
For me, the instruments often start as a concept. I want really slow sliding pitches. How can I do that? And if it's something I can't do with traditional instruments, then how can I make something that will? And then once the instrument's made, then it's about exploring the instrument and finding its limits and using that to compose. For example, with the kelp, about the pitches, one of the most exciting moments is when I cut the kelp and find out what the bottom pitch is. I have no idea until I do that at that moment. And so with the kelp, if I'm composing for that, it's like, well, I can go down, I can go up, I can have low, I can have high. So those become the limits. With the glass, originally it was for 6 vocalists in glass. So I can say, if the glass is going up, use your voice to go the opposite direction or hold steady at the pitch of the glass and then let the glass move. So it's in relationship to the instrument as opposed to traditional notation.
Thank you very much. We had 45 minutes, and we have used our 45 minutes. So we'll be packing this stuff up if you want to come and take a peek as we're doing so. But thanks again for coming out. I really appreciate it. I'm sure they do as well. Maybe each of you could just quickly say what you have coming out soon, a record or a performance.
I have my self-produced CD. You guys can come talk. And Wired Magazine or Wired.com is doing their first video podcast on me, which is kind of exciting. And that should be coming out sometime this week. It's Wired.com, and it's their video podcast.
Chachi?
I've also got a CD out that I've got a few here of. And I work with the Robot Speak in San Francisco. It's worth checking out their website for music that we do. We do shows and podcasts and all that fun stuff. So between Robot Speak and my new CD, that's all I've got going.
Yeah, Robot Speak's a really good store. It's in the Lower Haight. It's sort of guitar center for people who would come to an event like this. And then Chris?
I'll be playing at the annual Solstice Festival at the Chapel of the Chimes in June. That's a really great festival put on by Sarah Cahill. And also at the Edgetone Festival at the end of July at 20.